Liz DeGorsak on behalf of Taxpayer and Voter USA. Okay. What's this one? Salvador?
Does not wish to testify.
Does not wish to testify. All right. Chris Kahn from Salinas? Do not wish to testify. Okay. All right. I think that concludes at least the public speakers. Now, do we go back to...
Mr. Chair, yes. If I may...
5 minutes for the farmer.
Yes, right. We're not going to
before that, Mr. Chair, I would ask if I could have Mr. Costa come back, and if I may.
Sure.
He addressed slightly the Tier 3 issue, and other people have spoken on that, but I think Mr. Costa has spoken on that more extensively, and I'd like to hear what your real concerns are about Tier 3 and what this really means to you as a farmer.
If I could go out in my pickup and grab the list of things included in Tier 3 that weren't on that slide to start the meeting, there's about 8 reports and monitoring plans and analysis that are components of the nutrient management plan. You see an irrigation nutrient management plan up there. 2 extra things that Tier 3 has to do that Tier 2 doesn't, okay? But when I say the devil's in the details, it's in everything that's a part of that plan. And it's extensive. That's why I said it's exponential, because it's not just, you know, twice or 3 times what somebody else is doing. I think it's an enormously different workload, task load, monitoring, and reporting load expected of Tier 3. That's not of the others.
Now,
there is a scenario, and it wasn't hard to figure out, where a vegetable grower that wasn't using chlorpyrifos and diazinon and wasn't adjacent to the impaired water bodies would fall all the way to Tier 1, but yet the acreage situation, being over 1,000 acres, would throw the other into Tier 3, and that's why I commented how could they not even be in adjacent tiers. But my comment about the exponentiality of that load was in most part related to the irrigation nutrient management plan. I mean, I want to make sure that everybody sitting behind the table understands all the details, not just the executive summary portion that you know, Tier 3 is going to have to do, you know, some additional plan or this extra work, because there's a lot of little sub pieces on every bit of that. And I mean, in my opinion, I'm probably looking at 3 or 4 additional people in my operation, and I fully expect to not be in compliance at some point, because there's so much that's due, there's so much documentation, so much reporting. I feel like we're going to be reporting on the reporting by the time it's over. And I expect to miss a deadline, have an employee miss a deadline, and be out of compliance somewhere. And my concern would be that when I talk about being set up to fail, it's for reasons like that. And I would be concerned about the board setting themselves up to have something that's not enforceable. I mean, I am fearful of not being able to comply, then my next question is, okay, what are you going to do when that happens? Because I think we kind of need to know that. I think a lot of people would want to know that, you know, up front. You know, what is that plan? I mean, it's not a simple thing we're looking at.
Mr. Costa, can I ask you what I assume that you qualify into Tier 3 of what you know as a Tier 3 today?
If you did it on a ranch-by-ranch basis, we would have ranches that would fall into each of the 3 tiers. If you look at the operation as a whole, then we would fall into Tier 3, if you look at the whole operation as one unit.
As a farm operation, if you looked at the total acreage, you would qualify for Tier 3. If you looked at individual ranches, then you would be in what tier?
Some would be in 2, and some would be in 1. and it's going to depend on chemical use, maybe the crops grown, issues like that. We have one ranch, it's a vineyard, that we're working on.
So you wouldn't be in Tier 3 at all?
No, we would have ranches that would be in Tier 3.
As well?
Yeah.
So you'd have them in 1, 2, and 3?
Mm-hmm.
I see, okay.
Okay.
Thank you, appreciate it.
And Mr. Costa, before you leave, I was reading through the Irrigation and Nutrient Management Plan monitoring requirements during the lunch hour, so I'd have a much better feel for the details that you're speaking of. And they're in here. Is there anything specifically that you think is unduly burdensome to have to contend with, or is it just the breadth of all these components put together that does it?
I mean, it's the breadth of all the components, but even when we sit down and think about discharge monitoring, surface water discharge monitoring, when that comes to an individual basis, I've tried to talk every time about how complicated it gets and how fast it gets complicated, because the definitions still talk about runoff as water that leaves the field versus water that leaves the ranch. And so that already starts to complicate everything, because, you know, we work on systems where we're trying to consolidate water to some point on the ranch in order to be able to deal with it or treat it or put it back on the ranch. And so that definition has never changed. And even if we don't have a drop of water leaving our final collection point and accessing a stream, we're still determined to have, you know, irrigation runoff. But yet that water is not leaving the ranch. It's leaving the field to get to some other point on the ranch where we're dealing with it at that point. That is one of the problems. But and when I look at the discharge monitoring and individual monitoring, I mean, I was part of a watershed group on one of the East Side Creeks in the Salinas Valley. And you could take that point, that monitoring point, and figure out, I thought pretty easily, who all the players were that needed to be sitting around the tailgate having the conversation about what was showing up in the monitoring results. And that's what we did. And half of that group is sitting in this room. And it wasn't hard to do. It was a cooperative effort. Everybody was sharing information. We're looking at the results. You know, we've seen, you know, what the trends were and weren't, and we could do something productive about it from the time we left that meeting in somebody's yard on the ranch, you know, adjacent to that creek, you know, that was being monitored. And that's why there's such support for that kind of process. I mean, that made sense, because, I mean, I got chills just thinking about it. I mean, I get wound up thinking about it, just about where this is going and how much time we're going to spend on a sidetrack versus being out on the ground trying to address the problem and being in the middle of it and making management decisions with the best information that we can gain. And the information that, you know, that we get now is a lot different than the information my dad got 30 years ago. I'd rather be out on the ground than in an office managing a staff filling out a bunch of forms. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Chair, can I make another comment before we go on?
Yes.
It just brought to a point in Watsonville, and today there was mention of San Gerardo area. And there's been a lot of conversation about the water contamination. Yes, they've had water contamination. But that particular place, if you've been around the Salinas Valley, Camp McCone, would probably, you recognize that name more than San Gerardo. That has had water problems from day one, when it was built back in the 1940s, when the military occupied that. It had inadequate septic systems, and consequently, over the years, it has expanded its problems. And I don't want people to think that all the issues are attributed to ag and use of nitrates, which has been kind of implied by individual speakers. So, yes, there is problems there. Yes, there has been new programs, new water developed for that particular area. but it goes for a long period of time. A lot of different types of chemicals that have been used, from rubber being developed and scientific development, from military use of discharge of hydrocarbons directly on the ground, and a whole gamut of things. So I don't want to underplay the issue that those folks have not had good water, because they have not had good water. But it stems from a lot of years and a lot of uses and not proper uses of that particular land. So I just want to clarify that.
Okay. We have 5 minutes left for Tess Dunham, correct? Okay. Ms. Dunham?
I have a couple of colleagues here as well.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. Need microphones. You can probably share that mic, right?
Yeah.
Remember to say your names before you speak, please.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you again for this.
Whoa.
Is that loud?
That's fine.
Okay. Just echoing through my mustache. Sorry. Thank you again, Chairman Young and members of the board. Danny Merkley, Director of Water Resources for the California Farm Bureau. Danny Merkley, Merkley. Okay. We listened carefully at the March 17th meeting, and we heard comments made about the groundwater component of our proposal, and we have developed language to address those comments. Tess Dunham and Rick Tomlinson will present that additional information. I'm the window dressing.
Thank you, Danny, and you do a fine job. So again, as Danny said, there were...
Can you spell your
name? Yes, I'm sorry. Tess, T-E-S-S, Dunham, D-U-N-H-A-M. Somac, Simmons, and Dunn here representing a number of the agricultural groups and the Farmers for Water Quality. So the two key takeaway points that we took based upon what appeared to be comments from all of you were that there needed to be a better understanding of the audit process, and there was some concerns that our original proposal in March did not necessarily address groundwater and groundwater monitoring, maybe to what this board would like to see. Due to the circumstances that we had, we took that to heart. We went back, and we have some suggested changes to our alternative proposal in response. First, on the audit process. We have a goal that we really wanted to make sure that the audits themselves were objective and based on sound technical information. So to achieve that, we have created some additions to what was our attachment B from last time to try to create some more objectivity and transparency in the audit process. So we have added some key components. That the third-party coalition group would need to establish a technical advisory committee in order to help them establish what is the appropriate audit process. That technical advisory committee would consist of the people like the Professor Mark Los Hertos, who testified here earlier today, those technical experts who have some in-depth knowledge about agriculture, agronomy, and the disciplines that we deal with on a daily basis. And there would be only be grower representation on the Technical Advisory Committee, and their specialist would be limited and could not be more than 50% of that committee, because it needs to be objective and it needs to be technically based. We would also then suggest that there needed to be another component that would make sure that as the auditors conduct their work, that there is a way to review the audits as done by the auditors. And so the work plan, as developed by the third-party coalition group, would have to have some type of a check and balance on that audit review process. Third, we think it is important that our third-party coalition alternative have some input from the public. And in order to address that, we would require that all the third-party coalition groups that would go under the alternative would need to establish a public advisory committee. So they have that interaction with the public to talk with the local Department of Health or the county ag commissioners and the different other people in their local area in order to help advise them and guide them along the way. And specifically, one of the components of our proposal was an aggregate audit report annually, and this group would be tasked with reviewing that annual report before it was ever submitted to the regional board and to make recommendations back, so we have stakeholder and public input into our process. Now, going on to groundwater, which was probably of the bigger issue, so we went back based upon the comments received by all of you, and we have developed a draft groundwater assessment monitoring and reporting program for your consideration that would go along either as a standalone for all the groundwater monitoring requirements currently within the order, or also in conjunction with the coalition alternatives. And the goal here was to set up a process to assess groundwater quality and to provide feedback for growers based upon the assessment and the identification of areas of concern.
30 seconds.
That's it? Okay, so to establish additions to address, we would have a cooperative monitoring. It would be cooperative. Dischargers would elect to participate, much like the surface program, and you would coordinate with existing programs. You would have to develop a work plan. You would rely on existing information. You would identify other additional monitoring sites that may be necessary if there's a lack or a gap of it data information. There would be a developed monitoring plan. All that goes to the regional board for review and approval, and, of course, timeline for the collection of data, culminated with a final report that goes back with the characterization and the assessment, laboratory results, any typical monitoring type of report. And then to Rick.
Just simply to conclude, we would ask that you direct staff to work with Rick Tomlinson, T-O-M-L-I-N-S-O-N. We would just ask that you direct staff to further incorporate the third-party coalition that we've presented and to work with us on integrating that into a draft order. I would just comment that the decision you have before you is really amazing, because we presented you with a program that we have not found anywhere else in the nation. Certainly our proposal, if adopted, would be the strictest ag waiver program in the state, and we believe in the nation as well. If not the, it certainly would be one of them. There's nothing else that we've found that individually audits individual farms. And so you have two choices before you. Either one is going to result in the strictest program in the state and definitely one of the strictest in the nation. And so it's amazing that we are not in a collaborative process when agriculture is coming to you with that type of a program, and yet we still have such challenges in communication and lack of collaboration. And so some of the comments you heard earlier, I think, particularly the senator, about we really need to move from this point forward into a collaborative process. That's the only way we're going to be successful, is by working together. Whatever you finally adopt, we must have that collaboration. Otherwise, we're all going to end up with failure.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
We do have copies of the documents that we have prepared to, or the groundwater program, as well as the additional audit revisions to our attachment B that we submitted in March.
And these were not submitted before the cutoff? For what reason?
They've been developed through, just as your staff will probably make adjustments and recommendations to you in their presentation, we have been listening to you in this process. The cutoff was in January. We've obviously learned a lot since between now and January. They're here for you. You can take them. It's up to you, Chair, whether you want to have them in the record or not. That is your discretion.
You can hand them to Ms. McChesney.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Thanks for your proposal on the groundwater program. Just on that part of what you just talked about, which is most of it, aside from the not reporting individual results, do you see anything in the draft order that we have for the board that would preclude you using that approach?
I'm not quite sure I understand. Explain one more time the question.
So aside from not reporting the individual results, which I gather was not part of your proposal.
Actually, in our proposal, we would report the analytical results, but for the wells that were determined to be necessary for the assessment, that are representative and spatially representative, there would be reporting of the analytical results. But just like with Gamma and other data, the wells would be reported and identified based upon a township section range versus ID specific property location, which
right.
is a safety function.
Right, I saw that up there. So, aside from that, do you know if there's anything in the groundwater monitoring that we've proposed that would preclude you from proceeding with your proposal?
Other than yours is required to be done individually, this would be on a cooperative spatial distribution then requiring every grower to have to sample an individual well.
So it's the cooperative part?
Yes.
Okay. It's that... In the draft proposed order, it's an individual requirement. So once it's done, then there is no benefit to doing anything other than what is required in that tiering proposal versus a collaborative or a cooperative monitoring program for groundwater that would use existing data and supplement that where needed.
Okay, I think we're going to clarify that when we come back. Thanks.
Yes, Dr. Hunter.
Yeah, thank you very much. I have one question on the audit, and so that I'm clear on the time frame, the audit, of course, remains an aggregate assessment, but there would be a review by a technical assistance committee or technical assessment committee, and what kind of timeline would that involve?
Okay, so how the audit process would work on a timing is, first, the third-party group would submit, I think it's within 6 months, a work plan to Mr. Briggs as the executive officer outlining how they would conduct all the audits within the term of the order. That's one of the big requirements, is that every grower who participates in that group would be subject to an audit. And so that work plan has to be submitted within 6 months. Once that work plan is approved, then, of course, you go forward and you start conducting your audits. The technical advisory committee would probably be established somewhat in parallel pending EO approval of the work plan. And the technical advisory committee's role would be very upfront work, as we've currently conceived, to help develop what is the process. What is the auditor going to look for? You know, it's kind of more have the professionals say, okay, when you go out on a farm, what are you going to actually look for? How are you going to rate it? How are you going to determine if that grower is implementing an appropriate management practice for the crop that he's growing? So the technical advisory committee would be designed to help set all of that up in a very objective, scientific, technical fashion, so it's clear as to what the auditors would do when they are actually auditing the individual participants.
Then I also note in the original document of December on page 17, it said that the aggregate report could be subject to appeal and that no reports will be submitted to the Water Board until that appeal is resolved.
I think the the version in March has changed a little bit, and I think what we're talking about there is, first of all, the third-party group would have to submit an annual report to the regional board summarizing all of the results of the audits that were done within that that year. It's an aggregate report. What we're talking about there is an individual independent audit that has been done, say, on an individual participant. If there's some disagreement between the participant and perhaps the results that the auditor came up with, we are suggesting within our revised attachment P that there has to be some process for that individual participant, whether you want to call it an appeal or something, to go back to the third-party group to say, I disagree with these audit results, and it's developing a process to address that. And so that individual's audit basically wouldn't be finalized until that appeal of it had been satisfied, and whether it may be, sorry, the auditor's claims are absolutely correct and you weren't doing what you were supposed to be doing and therefore you need to be subject to make some improvements, or it may be, okay, yeah, we see that there's some gray and perhaps you were doing it and the auditor misinterpreted. So it just has to resolve that before that person's audit is considered to be finalized.
And is there a timeline for that process?
There is. In the revised attachment B, I think that the individual auditor basically, or the individual participant, has to make a challenge to their audit within, we kind of have, a lot of that would be developed in the work plan, but where did it go? Yeah, or that's when the group would have to terminate their participation if they didn't respond after that review process had been set. But I believe we have it set up that the third-party group would develop as part of their work plan the details of what the termination and the appeal process would be. So it would, it would probably be like a 30 to 60-day time frame, but I don't think it's specified here, and it would be developed in the details of the work plan that would go to the executive officer for approval.
Okay, thank you.
But if there are specific timelines that you would suggest, we would welcome that. The key here is that we just simply wanted to provide due process, but certainly if someone was to be terminated, that would definitely be reported.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Chair. I do have a couple of questions, and some of this goes back to their March presentation and some of their information they have submitted. I hope I can put it in some, I'm trying to remember when I wrote these down what it really means today. But how, I know you addressed the confidential proprietary information, and are these farm plans considered part of that, and are the audits considered part of that confidential proprietary information?
So the farm plans under your current program, and even as I believe in, as have staff has proposed, would continue to remain on the farm in order to protect the confidentiality of the farm plan. It would not go into the regional board's offices. They currently are and would be under all proposals available for inspection by regional board staff upon arrival, basically at a farm for an inspection. So while they are, don't go into the regional board's office because that would then make them subject to public disclosure, they are available to regional board staff for review to determine their effectiveness and accuracy.
I know that's been a real concern for the farming community that some information should not be released to the public. I'm not sure how you're going to put all these people together. I've seen all the signatures that was submitted with your letter and your proposal. What percentage do you think that in our region that you would have enrolled in this program that you're proposing?
Boy, I honestly, Mr. Jeffries, I don't know, but if I would imagine people that would fall under Tier 2 and Tier 3 would take a very close look at participants. anticipating, and based upon the numbers that Mr. Quant put forward, that would be more than at least half the acreage within the region, if not the actual number of growers. So you would capture in a fair amount of the actual acreage.
Then if we don't have 100% enrollment, then are you going to submit with your plan, would your organization submit that information to the regional staff?
Submit what information?
Well, the remainder of the farmers that didn't enroll this program.
The way the program would work is that the farmers would elect to participate into the third-party group, and they would notify the regional board of their election. So you would know which ones want to participate in this program versus those who have decided to remain under other components of your waiver.
Well, what brings my question up is because Preservation Inc. has brought 93% enrollment, according to my notes.
Okay. Acreage.
93% of the acreage. I assume that there's going to be lack of either acreage or farm or ranches that will participate in this. Are you going to know, and are we going to know?
You will know.
We will know.
You will know. This is not an umbrella. The way it has been set up in the strikeout and underline version that we presented to you in March is people would make it's a voluntary decision to use the coalition alternative as their choice for compliance with the order. And they could say, yep, I want to go the coalition alternative approach to comply with the provisions of the order, or I'm going to stay with whatever you end up adopting ultimately, and whether that maintains current requirements for Tier 2 and Tier 3 or not, they would then comply with the waiver as you end up adopting it for other people. It's a voluntary selection that I want to take this path versus the other path that has been set forward. So you would know who is under what program.
Have you taken analysis of the cost between the staff's proposal and your proposal? Now, I know that a gentleman gave a presentation on behalf of the grower shippers, and there were some numbers that were pretty outstanding in that presentation.
Can I ask Richard Quant, is that in Brad's work that we've done? I don't know that we have a cost comparison between what it would cost for our alternative as compared to yours. Do we? No, we do not.
Okay. What the opinion, and I asked Mr. Costa to come back up to clarify some of his concerns on the Tier 3, and I didn't see anything really in your proposal to address the tiers per se. The 1,000 acres criteria compared from farms to ranch, because I look at a farm that could be many ranches, where a ranch would be a singular facilities.
So how basically what our proposal would do is you would make this selection into the alternative coalition third party group. And the current requirements as they are proposed under the staff order for Tier 2 and Tier 3 would basically go away as they exist in that order, and instead you would be subject to participating in the coalition group and the audit provisions that we are proposing. And in the audit criteria that we have established, it's actually looking at different risk for different parts of your operation would be kind of part of what the audit criteria would need to include. And it would be risk-based, and there are four different areas of risk that we had identified. That would be toxicity and sediment and stormwater, toxicity and irrigation runoff, nutrients and irrigation runoff, and nitrate leaching to groundwater. So it separates out four of the main issues and components. Okay. So it's risk based on those versus one collective determination. And then everybody would be audited equally, And the main thing here is that you are implementing management practices to address those areas of risk that you have for your individual operations. So it's far more individual operation based versus trying to create nebulous categories that may or may not reflect a risk of an individual operation.
Well, my next question you've already asked, and that was the groundwater, and I was going to ask you why didn't you have a groundwater segment to your proposal, but you addressed that. What would be your process to notify regional staff of violations or violators?
So we have included within this a participant termination process, in that once a person's audit has been resolved, if they need to make improvements, they need to make them. If they fail to make those improvements within a certain amount of time, that, you know, it's been identified that their operation and their management practices are deficient, and if they fail to make improvements, if they fail to improve their management plan, and they fail to make on-farm improvements, then we will, the third-party group would terminate the individual's participation within 30 days, and that notification would be made to the regional board that this person is no longer in the coalition. You need to do something with them now.
Okay.
So we do have that provision.
Just to add to that previous questions about the staff proposal, right, we spent considerable amount of time trying to go through in a strikeout mode and offer different ideas. And you might recall in March I had some of those comments just in my presentation. But what happened is it just the way the proposal is written, there's too many things that cross-reference. And so you couldn't really start making the changes and have everything still make sense. And so what our proposal is truly an alternative. So it's whatever improvements the staff think that might be made, you know, if you so desire, then you can add ours into that, and there's an alternative. Or you can just simply go with a coalition approach, you know, altogether. But the way that the strikeout document was offered to you in March was to build upon the fact that the staff proposal did allow for a coalition to be created, but to Mr. Briggs' point, it would never be created under the current staff proposal because there's no reason to create it because all those requirements fall on each individual farm. As long as they fall on each individual farm, you'll never have the opportunity to work together cooperatively because you're still going to have to do all those individual requirements. So they're just fundamentally different. They're two different ways to get at the same thing.
It would be nice that we could have all these resolutions and ordinances and waivers all in layman's language so we could all understand it clearly.
And but I might be out of a job.
Well, I was just going to allude to that we wouldn't have to have half of our audience be attorneys to interpret it to their clients what this really meant. But anyway, my next question is, have you addressed the tiled lands? And the reason I brought this up before because I live in Salinas, former mayor of Salinas. The west of Salinas is mostly tiled irrigated lands and some of the best agriculture land in the world. And I'm concerned not only of loss of economy, but loss of jobs for my citizens in our area. Because I can see some of the staff's requirements, and I know they're saying, well, we're not stopping agriculture from using tiled lands, but when you do look at the final, it's the runoff, the discharge, and I understand that we have to do something with the discharge, but we can't limit these people to no crops or one crop because of the type of ground that they have and so forth. So have you considered that? Because not only Salinas Valley has tiled lands, but I'm sure there's some in Santa Maria. There's some in San Juan Basin that we have to be concerned with.
So I think there's two responses. First of all, we have identified that, you know, the issue of nutrients and irrigation runoff may also come from operation of tile drains. So we do recognize that it is an issue, and it is one of the categories of risk that we have identified that kind of needs to be a part of the audit process. When the technical advisory, I think the idea with the technical advisory committee is they would convene and then determine, so if we're looking and auditing someone's operation to evaluate, you know, are they what they are doing to address the issue of potential nutrients within a tile drain, we would be looking to the technical advisory committee to advise us as to what should we do? What should growers be doing in those circumstances where they do have tile drains? So we don't have the answer here, but it is one of those, you know, complex issues where the professionals and the experts that we would look towards from the technical advisory committee, which is why it's so important.
I think that relates to some of the comments that we heard earlier, that the scientific analysis for all this hasn't caught up with today's world and needs more investigation. I think my last question...
And just one other thing real quick on that. The other thing that, you know, we have alluded to in here is that there may be some circumstances where growers in, you know, common drainages or common watersheds or subwatersheds might want to implement some type of a collective treatment system in areas where there are tile drains, and the third-party group would look for to help facilitate those type of opportunities where it may be necessary, and that may be exactly the type of situation where something like that might work.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking how many acres of land you would have to take out of production to do something like that.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
The ultimate goal is that we have to clean up the water. That's the ultimate goal. That's what I'm here for. But my last question is to deal with the food safety, the corridors, which I talked to earlier from... Mm-hmm. The other agency that was here, and I didn't see you address that totally.
As far as, well, with our proposal, you wouldn't be subject to, if you went for it with the third party coalition alternative, you wouldn't be subject to the water quality buffer plan requirements that are within the staff's proposal. So it would still, obviously, you still need to address sediment runoff. You still need to look to appropriate management practices. But there's no specific riparian buffer requirement or vegetative riparian filter strip requirement or buffer plan requirement within
considered?
This alternative. What?
Was it considered?
You know, we did. But we, again, going back to consideration of what is the appropriate management practice. And, you know, we, again, this program, just like yours, would not be able to specify specific management practices. Now, I would, you know, obviously take issue with the staff's proposal. I think it does try to specify a 30-foot buffer, riparian buffer corridor in the MRP, which is a management practice, and I think that crosses the line. So we have to avoid doing that. And so it goes back to what are the management practices that individual grower has employed to deal with sediment. And perhaps maybe they're using a riparian if they're able to, but if they're not because for food safety, then they're going to have to look at other alternatives. And I believe that there are other alternatives out there that people are using.
Yeah. The only thing I would add to that is at the federal level, the Food and Drug Administration is required now by new federal legislation to implement a new regulation for individual farms next year. A draft of that is expected at the end of this year. In anticipation of that, a lot of the retailers and some of the trade associations have been working on a harmonized metric. So I'm not familiar with what is in the leafy green metric, but the harmonized metric calls for individual risk assessments, individual farms to make that decision about how to handle buffers and habitat and so forth. But all of that will be part of a different regulatory process that will start at the end of this year and will be governed through the Food and Drug Administration.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, we're going to take a break. actually, because I know the reporter would like to rest her hands and fingers. And when we come back, do we want to have staff respond to what we've heard, and then the board can start to weigh in on what the board would like to see happen as the next step? Okay? So 3:30. We'll come back. Please take your seat.